Hey, this is Maddie.
And this is Coco.
And this is Spill the Mead,
a history gossip podcast. Bitch, the pot, the tea is hot. So hot.
It's so hot. It's oh my God. Hot. I'm so excited for it's not hot. It's freezing.
No, you were so like cold in this room.
So bundled right now. You're just like, oh, it's hot. You were doing great though. For a second, you had me thinking.
If you say it enough,
it was hot.
You can make it happen. I'm going to tell you the story.
I'm so excited. You've been building this one up a little bit.
Uh-oh, I hope I didn't build it up too much.
No, you built it up just now. I'm so excited.
I'm going to tell you about Nellie Bly, the lonely orphan girl.
Oh, well, shit. Yeah. Okay.
Also, I have next to that Snark Queen, because she is.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The trauma will make you funny.
The trauma makes you funny.
The trauma makes you funny. And interesting.
I have a lot of stories to tell.
With time, honeybees. With time.
So in September 1887, a young woman was brought before doctors at Bellevue Hospital in New York. Upon observing the vacant look in her dark eyes and hearing her like mumble repeatedly about a suitcase. Being missing, like lost suitcase, they pronounced her hysterical and said, that's it, we're shipping you off to Blackwell Island, the New York City lunatic asylum.
Okay, they're like, you know what the issue is with the suitcase is your uterus.
It's traveling.
It's all over the place. It's like roaming all throughout your body.
You're crazy.
We've got to lock you away for that.
Yep.
Definitely.
Yep. It's not that you legitimately lost a suitcase. It's that you're just insane.
Because obviously,
that's what we do with women that we don't know what else to do with in this time period. So today, Blackwell Island is synonymous with abusive conditions, sadistic nurses, and sane women held against their will.
Oh, God.
Often because they didn't speak English.
Okay, great.
And we know this because the pale-faced young woman that we were just talking about was, in fact, Nellie Bly, one of the first female undercover reporters.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, shit.
Yes.
Oh, shit.
Yes.
Ooh, okay. Ooh, already it's twisty.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Okay, 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 okay.
So author David Randall writes in his book that he wrote in 2005 called Great Reporters, he says, quote, Nellie Bly's life resembles nothing so much as the plot of a particularly far-fetched Victorian novel. End quote.
Oh my God.
Which I had to include because it does.
Oh my God. I'm like so hooked.
Good. Okay. She was born Elizabeth Jane Cochran on May 5th, 1864, and nicknamed Pinky because her mother had her christened in a bright pink, like hot pink christening gown.
Okay. Cute. That's where her nickname came from.
Pinky. Or it could be because she always wore pink as a child.
Okay.
It's one or the other. I read both.
I mean, the hand in hand, really.
They go together.
Oh, my God.
The unconventional pink christening gown is like an omen for things to come later in her life because she goes on to live a pretty unconventional life.
Oh, my God.
It's cool. I'm going to tell you. So Pinky starts out really happy childhood.
Okay.
Her dad is like a local judge. They have a lot of money. Her mom's there. She's got a bunch of siblings, like happy childhood until she's six. And then her dad dies, like, unexpectedly.
Okay.
Poor Judge Cochran. We don't know why. Okay. He died unexpectedly, and he didn't leave a will.
Fuck.
Yeah.
As a judge?
Thank you, the irony right there.
Mm-hmm. Why? The disarray.
So there's more disarray, because his assets, without a will, his assets had to be divided equally between his heirs, and there were so many fucking heirs.
Oh, no. Why would you do that?
It was poor planning.
Yeah. Oh, man.
He had produced 10 children from a previous marriage before he even got with Pinky's mom.
Sweet God.
And then there was Pinky, her mother, and four other kids. Like
seed.
16 kids.
His seed spilleth.
Spilleth over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wild.
He's fertile.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Don't make eye contact with this man.
So even though he was worth like $1.1 million in today's money, the nature of his holdings that he had in the town made it impossible to divide that like cash equally. Okay. What they had to do is like break things up and sell it like real estate. So they had a huge 10,000 square foot house that they lived in, but they had to sell it at auction under market value.
Okay.
So by the time the kids from his first marriage got their share of the money, there wasn't much left to be divided between the second family.
Yeah. I'm kind of seeing why he was like, fuck it, I'm not dealing with any
of
this.
I guess,
16
right?
kids, like that's too like, many. Whatever, the state can figure it out.
So poor little Pinkie Pie, she was shit out of luck.
Yeah, no.
Even worse, the money that Pinkie and her siblings would have inherited when they came of age was super mismanaged by their court-appointed guardian.
Great.
The same man who incidentally like bought their house for super cheap under market value at auction, which okay. is giving Lemony Snicket.
I was gonna, oh my God, it really is. Oh my God. Oh
yeah, it's very Count Olaf.
Did something happen to her mom?
No, her mom's still there, but she's just a woman, Maddie.
Oh, duh. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
How could she possibly?
The she legal can't guardian. Manage the money. Mm-hmm. God, she's just a woman with her woman brain.
I'm such an idiot. That's, I.
So as a result of all this, Pinkie got very little of her money. And things got worse when Pinkie's mom gets remarried. Pinkie's mom, Mary marries a super violent alcoholic.
And my girl.
Because in that time period, it was expected that you would have a husband to care for you and provide for you and your children who didn't get shit in the will. Mm-hmm. So Mary gets married again. Then she divorced him after a couple years when he tried to shoot her at the dinner table.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be happy because he died. Like her and Judge Conker were so happy.
They probably were. They were I guess procreating we don't know that, all over the place.
A lot of love to give. All yeah, over. Then right? Just not pulling out with that love.
We're not pulling out.
No.
So at this point, Pinkie Pie is trapped by poverty and the common expectation that she would become a mother and a housewife. Like these are the aspirations of a woman in this time period. Mm-hmm. But Pinkie wasn't having that. She was plotting her escape.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
Like they didn't put me in pink for nothing.
Right? At 15, she enrolled in, and this is actually the name of the school. The State Normal School in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Because that's just what we name that.
Well, yeah. But you don't want it to be.
Yeah.
Is that one extraordinary school?
Yeah. Is this the strange school?
Yeah.
No, this is the normal school.
This is the normal one.
So at 15, she enrolls there for teaching. She wants to be a teacher, which is a commonly accepted female profession at the time. But because of her financial struggles and the mismanagement of her inheritance, she only gets to stay for 1 year.
Oh, God.
Okay. Which is still a lot more education than many other women of the time period received. Like she did regular elementary school, and then she went a full year after that to a higher education learning.
Okay.
And she moves with her mom and two of her older brothers to Pittsburgh.
Okay.
They're going to like start over.
Go Steelers.
Yep. She begins looking for work to help out her family, but she doesn't get a lot of opportunities for work. Her brothers, even though they're super less educated than she is, mm-hmm. they get jobs right away.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
She's pissed. She can't get any work and she's mad. She was smart and pretty well educated for a woman of her time. And she just was like, this is bullshit. Why can't I get a job? So then she reads this article in the newspaper in the Pittsburgh Dispatch. Mm-hmm. And this article is criticizing the presence of women in the workforce.
Oh, Jesus Christ, dude. Mm-hmm. Could you fucking imagine, like, reading?
Yeah, that? It's the whole...
Like, in the paper.
The whole tone of the article is that women should be at home caring for their families. Mm-hmm. That's what's wrong with our country.
That's what's wrong with it. That...
Yep.
God, if you guys would just fucking go home. Just go home.
Just
that
go home.
Fix everything.
Just rear the children.
Oh, my God. All of the issues that we're having in the world is because someone let you out of the fucking house.
Yeah. So this pisses her off. She's already salty because she can't get a job and her stupid brothers are like hired. So she writes, she's like, I'm not going to just let this be this article. I'm going to write a response to this.
Ooh.
She writes such a bitchy letter, an open letter.
Yes.
I mean, an eloquently written fuck you.
Yes, Nellie. We love that.
Yeah, and she writes this to the editor, and she's like, hey, women actually need more opportunities for work, especially those responsible for their families.
Yeah.
Like, there are women who are the providers.
Yeah.
Can't just be living in the gutter in the street. No. She signed the letter Lonely Orphan Girl because she's got a penchant for drama.
Yeah, she does.
This girl's like, I'm going to sign this Lonely Orphan Girl to prove my point that there are women who need to support themselves. We don't all have a male protector.
No, because sometimes people die.
And we don't all want a male protector, too.
Like, for fuck hell sakes. Like, what was her mom, like, supposed to do? Literally, what are you supposed to do?
Right.
Like, even, like, you can't even, like, we'll go get married. Okay, but, like, that takes time sometimes. Like, even if that were, like, okay, I will do that. It's right. I can't do that tomorrow, though. And,
exactly.
Like, I have babies tomorrow that need to, like.
They need to eat.
What are you, like, the logic of all of this? It just makes, like.
No sense. So she signs a letter, Lonely Orphan Girl, which is so dramatic. But you should seriously Google this letter and read it.
Okay.
It was too long and too wordy to put in here. I wanted to quote it to you because it was very well written, but it goes on and on about why this dude is fucking wrong and she's right. And it's Lonely Orphan Girl. I just fucking love it.
It's our fucking Taurus.
Yes. It's a flair for drama. So the newspaper's editor sees this letter and he's like, oh, fuck yeah, I gotta get this girl in here.
Yeah, where is she?
I'm hiring her immediately. So he invites her to come work for him as a reporter.
That's irony.
Yeah, he's like, this bitch can write.
Yeah.
And she did not know. She was just so fired
fucking
up.
Pissed. Yeah, she's just pissed. This some guy, like, tried to keep women out of the workplace and just got one in it.
Yep.
So hard.
Now she's his coworker.
Yeah. Oh, cute.
So she decides she needs a pen name. Mm-hmm. And she picks one. She uses the pen name Nellie Bly, which she took from a well-known song at the time, also called Nellie Bly. But let me tell you about this song.
Okay.
This song is written from a man's point of view, and it's all about his fiance and how she's anticipating the joys of their marriage. Like, the song, it's also very racist, so I'm not quoting the song.
Okay.
But the whole is like, I'm going to marry this girl, and she can't wait to sweep the hearth for me, and she can't wait to serve me dinner, and verses and verses that are all like that.
Yeah.
So this fucking snark queen,
yeah,
who got hired because she was like, women are better than just housewives,
yeah,
decided to ironically take the name of a very famous song at the time about a housewife. It's so good.
It's so
right?
good.
She's like, okay, fuck you. It's so snarky. It's passive aggressive. It's good.
It's Nellie Bly.
It's Nellie Bly.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. She's brilliant. So during her time at the Dispatch, she wrote her first exposés on, like, prison and factory conditions. And she does not want to write fluff pieces.
Yeah.
She's like, no, factories suck. Children die there. I want to write about that. I want people to know.
Yeah, no, her angle is emotion. That emotion is pissed
and
rage.
Social
you.
Reform.
Yes.
Things should be better. Things should be better. She went down to Mexico undercover for several months and just took her mom with her as a chaperone. And she wrote this whole expose on the dictator that was down there at the time, Porfirio Diaz. I butchered that. Sorry, guys. But she covered all the abuses of his regime and, like, what they were doing to the people.
Yeah.
And it was so well received. She came back. She got a pay raise.
Okay. Yeah.
And a promotion.
Yes.
And the promotion was that she could be in charge of the society pages, which is just girl gossip. Like, so-and-so was having tea with so-and-so, and Miss Whatever bought a new dress from Paris. And
why?
Yeah.
What a, okay.
This picture.
Again, I'm just like, why would that make any sense?
Yeah. No, she's pissed.
Yeah.
She's pissed. She's like, I've been writing really cool, hard-hitting pieces, and then now you want me to talk about which lady came to the Whistledown Ball.
Yeah.
It is. It's like Lady Whistledown shit.
Yeah, like, how you've seen what I get heated about. It ain't that.
Yeah.
Like, you want me to write well? I need to be heated. I need a cause.
She felt like she was being punished for something. So she just pieces out. And she leaves. She doesn't say shit to anyone. She just leaves a note on her desk and it says, "I've gone to New York. Look out for me." And it's like, love always, Nelly.
Oh my God.
Yeah, look out for me because I'm going to do shit. You're going to see me.
Ooh, I'm on my way to New York.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay, no, I love her. I love her. I love her.
It's literally peace out, bitches.
Yeah.
Is what that says.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I love it. So she goes to New York because she wants to write pieces that are about men and women and affect
everyone.
Everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she begins looking for a newspaper job that would allow her to write on more serious topics. She found it really, really hard to get work. Okay. Just like the same thing all over again. So this is like 1886, 1887. And so it's still very male-dominated field, and Nellie can't find work, even though she's got a good resume.
Right.
Again, she gets fed up. She gets sick of this shit. She stormed into the office of the New York World, which is one of the leading newspapers in the country at the time.
The fucking, like, a Taurus bull storming in there. Yes. I'm like, fucking listen
How
to me.
How dare you limit me?
Yes.
How Nellie. Dare you? So if you've seen Newsies.
I have not.
Okay.
God, I'm so sorry.
To everyone who's seen Newsies,
yeah.
It's that newspaper. It's that newspaper. That's a real thing. That was based on a real story, believe it or not, loosely based. But it's that newspaper. So she wanted to write a story on the immigrant experience in the United States.
Okay.
The editor, Joseph Pulitzer, yep, it's that guy, declined the story, but he challenged her to investigate New York's most notorious mental asylum, Blackwell's Island. I can really only imagine how that conversation went down, too. Yeah. He's like, no, girl, no.
Yeah.
But if you can do this super, like, wild thing, then maybe I'll give you a shot. So our girl Nellie.
Hell yes. Let's
yes.
go.
Our girl Nellie, she doesn't just accept the challenge. No, that's not enough for her. She's not going to do some surface level bullshit reporting. She's going to get in there. She decides she's going to fake a mental illness.
Oh my gosh.
To gain admission and expose firsthand how patients are treated here.
That is like so ballsy.
It's so fucking
you
ballsy.
You have to have someone like, I mean, obvious, I'm sure you're going to get into it. Like someone, because someone has to know that they're not going to let her out of there.
Right.
She's going to be like, oh, okay, jig's up. Let me out now. I'm actually a reporter. They're going to be like, okay, are you
yeah.
a reporter?
Yeah.
Like, no.
Right?
Like, oh, fuck. Like,
yeah, there's a team.
Obviously,
her
like, people
reporter
know, yeah.
friends, they know. But
God, that's still so.
I could never do it. I'm so not that fucking brave.
No, because like, what is it? They pull out like those like electroshock things. I'm like, okay, I'm out, I'm out, I'm out. Yeah, like,
yeah.
no. I was like, yeah, who knows? Who knows what they're going to do? Like, no.
That's the thing. God, nobody knows.
Undercover.
She's got to go expose it.
Yeah, undercover journalists are.
They're made of much sterner stuff than I am.
Oh, God. Yeah, stuff I can't even approach.
So she does this. She sets off on this. And she cements her legacy as one of the most notable journalists in all of history. And everyone should read this book.
Uh-huh.
It's a little mini book. It's called 10 Days in a Madhouse. It's small. You can read it in a day. And it's about her experience there. It's her actual words. It's super short.
Oh my gosh.
It's really powerful, though. You can Google it. There are PDF copies online.
Oh, my God.
That you can read.
Ooh, okay.
So she uses an alias and calls herself Nellie Brown.
Okay.
And she successfully tricks like a matron of a house for homeless women. It was called the Temporary Home for Females, but she tricks the lady in charge of that. She tricks a police officer, a justice of the peace, and medical experts at Bellevue Hospital. She's a very, very smart woman and she's completely sane, but she's tricked several people
yeah.
into thinking she was insane, which speaks much more to the attitudes of the time
yeah.
rather than the actual status of her mental health, which is just
God.
Because at this time, women could be committed to mental asylums for the most ridiculous reasons ever.
Oh, yeah. Your uterus is wandering.
Your around. Uterus is wandering.
I would so be in there. Like, for sure.
Oh.
Like, I couldn't hook my own bracelet this morning and had, like, a fucking, like, tantrum. like, yeah, stomped my little feetsies and like went and woke my husband up. Like, before I leave the house, you need to hook this fucking bracelet. I'm gonna lose my mind.
Waking your husband up when he's asleep.
Oh, I'm
committed
out.
To the mental hospital
right there.
Yep,
for sure.
Let me tell you some other reasons why, just brief ones.
Oh god,
reading too much.
Okay,
being too sad.
Well, yeah, that's me. I'm out. Melancholy. The fucking melancholy.
Melancholy. Being displeasing to your husband.
See?
Grumpiness.
Oh, fuck. It's okay. Shit.
I know. I am fucking screwed. So physicians at Bellevue Hospital, they send her to Blackwell's. And I'm just going to quote you a little bit from like her actual book right here. It's not super long. This part isn't. Okay. So quote. As the wagon was rapidly driven through the beautiful lawns up to the asylum, my feelings of satisfaction at having attained the object of my work were greatly dampened by the look of distress on the faces of my companions. These poor women, they had no hopes of a speedy delivery. They were being driven to a prison through no fault of their own, in all probability for life. In comparison, how much easier it would be to walk to the gallows than to this tomb of living horrors. Jesus. On the wagon sped, and I, as well as my comrades, gave a despairing farewell glance at freedom as we came in sight of the long stone buildings. And then she goes on to say, I wondered if my companions knew where we were, so I said to Miss Tilly Mayard, where are we? At the Blackwell's Island Lunatic Asylum, she answered sadly. Well, are you crazy? I asked. No, she replied. But as we have been sent here, we will have to be quiet until we find some means of escape. End quote.
Oh,
I know.
God.
It's bleak.
Yeah.
It's fucking bleak.
Nellie was fucking made for undercover journalism, first of all. Second of all, that girl was so aware.
She is so aware.
Like,
oh, oh yeah.
God. So we have to stay quiet till we can find some kind of escape.
Yeah. So then Nellie goes on to say, but here let me say one thing. From the moment I entered the insane ward on the island, I made no attempt to keep up the assumed role of insanity. I talked and acted just as I do in normal life. Yet, strange to say, the more sanely I talked and acted, the crazier I was thought to be by all except one physician whose kindness and gentle ways I shall not soon forget.
Oh, okay. There was one that does give me hope. But...
No, he didn't do shit for her.
Oh, okay. Well, fuck then.
She was like, okay.
Let's see. Yeah.
Let's see what happens.
Like, are you actually evaluating me? If you were actually caring about my health and well-being, you would see that I am okay.
So there are accounts of just women whose husbands got tired of them and sent them to asylums. Most of the women in these asylums were homeless women. They were immigrant women, women who didn't speak English. It's really just used as a dumping ground.
God.
Yeah, it's so sad and gross.
Under the guise of like mental illness. Out of sight, out of mind, whatever.
Out of sight, out of mind, yeah. During her 10-day stay in the asylum, Bly witnessed horrifying conditions of neglect and abuse of the patients, some of whom were mentally ill and needed professional care, and others who were sent there by family members or were just like suffering from physical ailments. Like, my foot hurts today or whatever.
Yeah. God.
Mm-hmm. You're insane about it. It's awful.
It's like a real people.
So I have a long synopsis from a book, which I'm quoting directly from something called Blackwell's Almanac Volume 2, which is like a newsletter that's written about this actual asylum. And it's super long, but it is fascinating, and it sets the scene for what she went through.
Okay.
And it's shorter than reading her book, so it's a good synopsis of, like, what happened to her. What so many women went through. So many women who didn't have somebody counting down the days until they were going to get her out, right?
Right. Yeah, that's the thing. She had I mean, 10 days is a long time.
Yeah.
But, God, yeah, she had that out, like, where, they're just stuck. Until we can find some means of escape. What does that even mean? She didn't even know what that meant.
She didn't know what that meant.
Like, not yet. Oh, God.
Quote, the new inmate's first supper consisted of unsweetened weak tea that tasted of copper, a hunk of bread with rancid butter, and a dish of 5 prunes. Nellie could eat none of it. Subsequent meals were equally inedible. Bread was dirty black in color, hard, and composed largely of unbaked, dried dough.
Why?
I know.
Like, I don't under... Like, this isn't a punishment.
Yeah, it's nasty. The breakfast oatmeal and molasses were wretched. Insects were occasionally found in the food. Meat and potatoes were cold, and the meat was often spoiled. Nothing was seasoned. I feel like the lack of salt is like the least of your issues.
I was gonna say, yeah, this like literal black mold growing on stuff.
Yeah, but it's not seasoned, so yeah. Take it away.
Yeah, yeah.
There were no knives or forks. Beef was torn apart with fingers and teeth, and the toothless or those with poor teeth could not eat it. Sick patients were deprived of proper nutrition already and grew sicker.
Yeah.
This was in stark contrast to the food prepared for the doctors and nurses. On their short walks outside, inmates could glimpse through the kitchen window melons and grapes and all kinds of fruits, beautiful white bread, and nice meats. Sometimes they just ate that right in front of the patients.
They just fucking like close the whole thing out. Why bother? Why even fucking, like, just for the sake of keeping people alive again, we're going to feed them, like, molded, like, bug-ridden. So, like, just fuck it. You don't care. No one fucking cares. Like, let's all just, like, stop pretending anymore. Yeah. Like, just close the whole fucking thing down and let people fend for themselves. Like, right? Jesus Christ.
It's so gross. Cold permeated the facility. Inmates already blue and shivering were made to stand in line in front of open windows clad only in their thin dresses. Sick and older patients in particular suffered chronic chills and chattering teeth. Cries for shawls fell on deaf ears, while the staff had on heavy undergarments and coats. And this torture continued with the evening bath. In the freezing bathroom, Nellie was forcefully stripped of her clothing against her will, plunged into a tub of ice-cold water, and scrubbed raw by one of the inmates wielding a rough, discolored rag, which is so gross, I want to die.
Yeah.
This was followed by 3 buckets of icy water poured over her head in rapid succession. And as the water filled her eyes and ears and nose and mouth, she experienced the sensation of drowning. She was dragged shivering and quaking from the bath and put dripping into a short nightshirt. The woman who had just recovered from a bad illness was given similar treatment, and any plea for gentleness was met with threats of worse. Patients were bathed weekly, one after another, without a change of water until the bath was thick with scum. Why? It's so unnecessary.
Like, literally, like, why
do you have to be cruel?
Just for, like, straight torture. Clearly, you don't fucking care, so just leave people alone. You know, like, yeah. It's just let people, I can't. It's that's, like, scary what people do. Like, to other people.
Oh, how sadistic, and, like, people are.
Yeah. And, like, are just fine with it. And, like, someone, other human beings, like, asking you, like, can you please, like, be gentler? Like,
how miserable do you have to be?
That's a thing. Like, you're the one that belongs locked up somewhere if you can do that to someone. Like,
Clothing was changed no more often than once a month, unless there was a visitor, because, you know, you got to present well.
Jesus Christ.
Then a clean dress promoted the idea of a clean, well-managed facility. Mm-hmm. Beds were made uncomfortably high in the middle and sloping on the sides, and on bath night were immediately damp with bath water from wet heads and still dripping bodies. Scratchy wool blankets were so skimpy it was impossible to cover one's shoulders and feet at the same time. Even had patients been able to fall asleep under such conditions, the nurses' loud talking, heavy tread, and jangling keys when they checked each room several times a night would have awakened them. In the morning, nurses combed each patient's hair. Despite the angry sores apparent on some inmates' heads, the same few combs were used for everyone. Matted hair, sometimes still wet from the previous night's bath, was pulled and jerked mercilessly. There was nothing to do but endure the pain, because complaining got you nothing.
No, yeah. You just, like she said, like, you just have to be quiet until you can figure out how to escape.
On the first morning, Nellie asked for her notebook and pencil that had been taken from her when she was issued her asylum dress. You can't have it, so shut up, was the response that she got.
Great.
Nellie mentioned it to a seemingly sympathetic doctor who promised to look into the matter. And he later informed her that the nurse had said she only brought the notebook. And when Nellie insisted she had had a pencil too, the doctor advised her to fight against the imaginations of her brain, which is a really nice way to say, you're a crazy bitch. Mm-hmm. Maybe shut up about the pencil.
Maybe shut up about the pencil. Also, like, that's really cute, like, because 2 seconds ago, like, it did. So now she's saying I have the fucking journal. Like, she didn't give me that either, though.
Right.
Like, it's not even like, well, yeah. Where's my pencil? It's like, well, she's asking for this, and all she had was the, it's like, then fucking give me that, I get. Like, what the fuck? I hate all of it.
She goes on to describe some of the daily abuse that the patient suffered. Because if that wasn't enough, if food and frigid, nasty bath water is not enough, sitting on benches for hours on end was in itself excruciating, but this is what the women were forced to do. Patients tried to shift position, bending one leg under them, but were told to sit up straight with their feet on the floor. Talking was prohibited, as was getting up to stretch one's limbs. Attendants, including nurses, were petty, abusive, and sadistic. They pushed, shoved, and boxed ears, threatened, manhandled, and derided patients without provocation. They beat patients who complained of anything during the superintendent's infrequent visits.
Yeah, no. Again, it's like, this isn't like supposed, this is like horrible prison conditions, first of all. Yeah. And like, this isn't supposed to be prison.
Yep.
Like, this isn't supposed, like, you're running this under the guise of a hospital.
They are taking people against their will.
Yeah.
God. Rounding them up and then putting them in these inhumane, horrific conditions.
The, like, what is the, like, they're not even, like, trying to pretend like they're trying to help no. you. What is, like, the medical benefit of having to sit in the same position all day? There is none.
So the nurses don't have to do anything.
Yeah. Like, that's, they're not even, like, trying to pretend like they're helping anything.
Right? So, in Nellie's hearing, they baited, then choked a patient to silence her crying. As punishment, the nurses sometimes would send women to other wards, where not only were the patients more violent, so were the attendants. They goaded the most insane to do their worst, and they regularly kicked, jumped on patients, beat them with broomsticks, and occasionally broke their ribs. Patients were injected with so much morphine and chloral that they were parched and wild for water from the effects of the drugs, yet they were denied water. The doctors ignored most complaints and could themselves be rough and unfeeling.
I don't think it, I don't even know what chloral is.
I don't either.
Like, I can't.
Old timey medicine.
Yeah, who fucking even knows? It's just like chlorine. Like, who fucking knows, yeah, honestly? Who knows? Oh my God.
I know, it's really bleak. Really bleak.
That was people's life. That's going to like make you insane.
Yeah.
That's like going to make you insane. That's a super villain origin story.
Every day, day in, day out, you know that you don't get to leave. Yeah, no, I would be insane.
Yeah.
Later, Nellie said about the experience, it is only after one is in trouble that one realizes how little sympathy and kindness there are in the world, which is really sad.
Yeah.
But that's her worldview now.
Again, what the fuck? Like, when you're not seeing it, when you're not looking at it, like, yeah. When it's like, so they put these things so far away out in the middle of fucking wherever, you know, like.
Purposeful.
Mm-hmm. God. Ugh. There had to have been like, so, well, I guess I don't know like how this is gonna end. I'm hoping how it's gonna end is on day 10, everyone's gonna come bursting in there and be like, it's all fucking up. Like, and I like want her to be like sitting there like, mm-hmm. like, oh, 4 more days until all of you are gonna fucking get kind of thing.
I wish it happened that way.
Oh God, fuck.
But she does come out of the mental asylum. They get her out. Okay. And okay, so also everybody, there is a movie about this.
Oh.
About it's got Christina Ricci in it, which I love her.
Oh, yeah.
And it is so over exaggerated. Right. I mean, the conditions in the mental asylum were terrible.
Yeah.
But in the movie, they really, really like, they are torturing her.
It's interesting because, like, they didn't have to exaggerate it. That's like,
it was bad enough. It's interesting. It just covers that one little portion of her life, like this part of the story. She gets out. She's fine. And she writes this expose written about her 10-day stay there. And it appeared in The World as a 2-part illustrated series. The first on October 10th, 1887, entitled Behind Asylum Bars, which that's a catchy headline.
Yeah, it is.
It's a catchy headline. And her exposures of the abuses on Blackwell's Island was one of New York's most extraordinary sensations of the time. And readers were like dying to get these newspapers. They're lining up. And she put it out in a little series form. So they're literally lining up. Yeah. On the streets of New York to get these papers. Oh, the second installment was on October 16th, and it was called Inside the Madhouse.
Yeah, they made him wait a while. They for did. That one. Yeah. Star him out.
Her reporting placed her on the world's permanent staff, which is what she wanted all along. Mm-hmm. And the series was also published in the book that I talked about earlier called 10 Days in a Madhouse. I'm telling you. Read it.
God,
it's
yeah.
fascinating. Nellie's investigation brought about much needed reforms for inpatient treatment at the asylum, and her work forever changed the field of journalism.
Yes, Nellie.
The budget appropriation for the Department of Public Charities and Corrections, which is what it was called, was increased from $1.5 million to $2.34
million.
And $50,000 was specifically designated for Blackwell's Asylum.
That's huge.
And then 7 years after she writes this story,
yeah,
they close this place down for good.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
That took 7 years. That started some stuff, though.
It
like,
did.
That got it.
It did.
Oh, God. Her, like, making that sacrifice. God. And then she, like, got to know people in there and you just had to leave them. Like,
yeah. That would be awful.
Ooh, I'd be, like, hunting down their fucking
families.
Put them in there.
Oh, right. Like, that's why she wanted that notebook and pen.
Yeah.
That's not where Nellie's story ends.
God, that's so many lifetimes right there.
I know. So her hands-on approach to reporting developed into a practice now called investigative journalism. That's from Nellie.
Oh, that was like the first time?
Mm-hmm.
That was like her fucking idea?
That's Nellie's thing. Nellie continued to produce regular stories on New York society and corruptions. Like corruption in the state legislature, unscrupulous employment agencies for domestic workers, and the black market for buying infants.
What?
Mm-hmm. That was a thing.
Nellie.
Yeah.
I fucking love her.
I love her. She's the people's hero.
Yeah.
She's doing it.
Black market for buying infants. I can't. I hate humans. I hate them. I love you, listeners.
We love you.
Don't do this.
Don't
be an asshole at all. Like, God.
It's kind of the motto, right?
Yeah.
Life motto. So Nellie undertakes a series of roles that allow her to expose unreported issues.
Ooh, okay.
Affecting women.
Okay.
So she pretends to be a single mother with a child born out of wedlock. Shunned.
Mm-hmm.
She pretends to be a prostitute in a home for fallen women.
Okay.
She pretends to be a glove seller to uncover how sales girls are mistreated by New York's male elite. And her straightforward and compassionate approach captivated audiences. People were calling her America's sweetheart at this point.
Yeah. Like, that's okay. She's very feisty.
She's so feisty.
Yeah, but okay.
She's a snark queen, I said. And she's still the lonely orphan girl that started it all.
Okay.
Yeah. They just love her.
Yeah.
They're like, she's the little darling
helping
everybody,
right? Yeah, just going buzzing around.
Just buzzing around. So she proves herself to be a master of disguise and a competent writer.
I was just going to say, too, like, this girl, like, how? You guys.
Yeah.
It's Nellie.
It's Nellie.
You know,
Nellie. It's Nellie in disguise again.
It's Nellie in disguise.
You guys, come on.
Yeah, let's go.
So she proves herself and proves herself and proves herself, and her editors are still appalled when she suggests her story that this is what she's best known for. This is, like, why people know about Nellie Bly.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Oh, shit. Okay.
She suggests an epic circumnavigation of the globe, like the whole world, in just 75 days. Because Jules Verne had just written this book, a novel called Around the World in 80 Days, and she's like, oh, well, I bet I can do it better.
Really? Okay.
This stat is, like, very ambitious in a time when a woman traveling alone cause such a scandal.
The person who wrote Around the World in 80 Days is over there like, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, Nellie.
I not just like have an achievement?
Well, he just wrote about it. He didn't actually do it.
Oh, okay.
So she's like, you know what? I'm going to do better. So they're like, fine, I guess we got to let Nellie be Nellie.
Mm-hmm.
So on November 14th, She set sail on the August Victoria bound for London. All she took, this is what she packed. Mm-hmm. One dress.
Okay.
Paper and pins.
Yep.
And a large jar of cold cream because you gotta keep that skin looking fierce.
I mean, Nelly, girl, yep. She's a master of disguise.
She's like, I don't need anything but this dress and some pins and paper and
yeah.
some
yeah.
facial cream.
Some goddamn facial cream. You gotta moisturize.
You gotta get face.
That's the thing. You moisturize.
You gotta
that's
moisturize.
That's the thing.
Especially if you're gonna traverse the globe. Mm-hmm. More than 1 million readers devoured her irregular dispatches because she wasn't writing them like on a schedule. Uh-huh. She was just, whenever she had a minute, she would pin something and send it. And people are eating this shit up.
I bet.
She includes little personal highlights like how she bought a monkey in Singapore.
She would.
That she named McGinty.
Okay.
Who wore a little fez hat.
All of that. Mm-hmm. All of that is so Nelly.
Nelly says, when I saw the monkey, my willpower melted and I began straight away to bargain for it. And she comes home with this fucking monkey.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah. My grandma growing up had a pet monkey.
Really?
His name was Reggie.
Reggie the monkey.
And he was large. He was a big monkey. This is my grandmother, right? And so they have photos of this thing and they are terrifying because they're these like super old like Polaroids, you know, of this like weird fucking like, what is that thing, you know? Because he's just like this big old monkey, spider monkey. Anyways.
Wow.
That's my thing about pet monkeys.
I don't think it's for me to own a monkey. Like, I have a puppy. That's enough.
Yeah, I think I'm more of a puppy person. I shouldn't have a pet that has, like, thumbs. Yeah,
not an alpha.
Nope. I have no thumbs. I can be the only one with thumbs.
So she's telling these little anecdotes. So she's got the monkey. She spends Christmas Day at a leper colony in China, not worried about getting anything, just being kind to people. And then threatening to slit her own throat when the crew of the boat that she was supposed to sail on told her that there was a bureaucratic delay that would add 14 days to the journey. She was like so invested in this.
Slit her own throat.
Yeah.
And like she might have. There's parts of her that give me Sarah Bernhardt a little bit.
Yes.
Like there's like parts of her spirit in there where I'm like, Sarah.
Yeah.
A little
she's
bit.
Gonna
little
do
unhinged.
Whatever the fuck she wants.
Yeah. Exotic pets. Little unhinged.
A little unhinged. Yeah, okay. No, it's lining up.
The element of acting.
Yeah.
Like all these disguises.
Absolutely. Like, oh, you're so right.
Look at that.
Soul sisters.
Mm, cute.
During a stopover in London while on her around the world trip, she registered for a passport at the American Legation Office and she filled in the requisite forms, trimming 3 years off her age. She just made her 22 instead of 25, even accomplishing all she'd accomplished at age 25.
That, you know what? Whoa.
I know.
Actually. Oh, God.
But then she's like, I don't actually want to be 25. I want to be 22. And she would claim for the rest of her life that she was that 3 years younger that she'd said.
Yeah.
And anybody who questioned her, she was like, my birth certificate is obviously wrong.
Yeah, I see. I love that.
She's
I
just
fucking
she
love
takes
that.
A stand and she does not back down.
Taurus. I love that. Like, no, guess what? I was not born that year.
No.
Her whole ass mother is sitting there like, I was there. I did it.
Yeah.
You know? And she's like, no, you did not.
Incorrect.
Not on that day.
Incorrect.
Sorry.
So despite numerous setbacks, mm-hmm. like that boat, they're going to be late. And adverse weather conditions, Bly beat her target instead of 75 days. It only took her 72 days.
Oh, my God. The magic three.
Yep.
3 days, 3 years.
25,000-mile journey in 72 days. Completed by train, steamship, rickshaw, horse, and donkey.
Horse and donkey. I like the donkey part. Just to say you did it.
Yeah.
It wasn't even like fun. You didn't even see stuff.
Oh, God.
Really.
It would not be fun at all.
No, back then, traveling that far for that many days in a row, the fucking sick.
No,
like, just
I don't
to
want
say
to.
You did it.
Her status as sweetheart of America's journalism was super cemented at this point.
Mm-hmm.
She wrote a book then called Around the World in 72 Days because she be a snarky bitch.
Yep.
And it flew off the shelves. Like they even made a board game about it.
I love
where you do all the little stops that she did. I have a picture of it. I'll show you.
Oh, my gosh. Cute.
So beating the record with 8 days to spare, she proved to all the world that energy rightly applied can accomplish anything.
Go off, Nelly.
Even though she only held the record for a few months because it was broken by some businessman who completed the journey in 67 days. But she didn't care. She's like, I already did it. I don't need to revisit that.
Yeah.
Nelly continued to publish influential pieces of journalism, including interviews with prominent individuals.
Oh my God.
Yeah, she really did it. So then fast forward to March 1895.
Mm-hmm.
Nelly meets Robert Seaman.
Oh God.
S-E-A-M-A-N, like a man of the sea.
Yes.
At a dinner party.
Okay. Oh God.
She met a man.
The sexy last name didn't even register. I was just like, oh, here he comes.
Here he comes.
Hey, look at that. Sorry. This is beautiful. You did it. This is beautiful.
He was a wealthy New York businessman. Mm-hmm. He made his fortune in wholesale groceries.
Damn.
Mm-hmm.
And he better have done it in a really fucking non-corrupt ass way, or else she's gonna be like, oh, guess what, baby?
Undercover expose you.
Yeah, exactly. Like, but we got married. No, the fuck we did. My fingers were crossed. It's undercover.
It's really funny that you say that. After he finishes with his grocery business, uh-huh. He starts this iron manufacturing company that's really successful, and he makes all this fucking money.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
They get married a month after meeting. Okay. 1 month. So they meet in March, they're married in April, early April.
Okay, see, Robert, this is Nelly Bly, babe. Mm-hmm. Like,
Robert doesn't know what he's in for. An article announcing their marriage called him one of the most carefully dressed men in New York, which isn't relevant to anything, but I fucking love that.
I was going to say, yeah, like just what a fucking like
dapper gentleman.
He was like reading it probably. Aww.
Yeah, but thanks. Also he's like 40 years older than her. Okay. So what else were they going to say about her, about him?
It's, again, Robert, buddy.
Yeah, so all of his loved ones are super suspicious, right?
Okay, thank you. They're like, you guys.
Yeah, she's 40 years younger than you. She just married you for your money, man. You know she did. One magazine.
Oh, God, is that what they're thinking? Okay.
That's what they're thinking. Okay. One magazine even wondered if it was an example of her, quote, stunt reporting, in which she would pretend to be married and then write about it.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
This is what they're saying at the time, too.
That is 1,000% my hypothesis right now. You can tell me what actually happens. Let me be like, I don't think so. I think she's undercover right now.
We don't know a ton about their marriage, but here's what we do know.
Oh, God.
You know, he's 40 years older than her, and he is extremely fucking jealous. He's super, super jealous. He even hired one of his employees to follow her around every time she left their house and just to report back to him what she was doing, where she was going, who she was talking to.
Yeah, Nelly's not the one.
Oh, no, Nelly's having none of it. Nelly's pissed. Nelly, she has the man arrested.
Yeah. He's stalking me.
Yep, but her husband just posts bail.
Oh,
well,
so fuck. Okay.
It seems like after that they work out their problems, but he dies a couple years later.
Okay. Because,
you know, he's old.
Yeah, 40 years.
Yeah.
That's a gap.
So he dies, and unlike her wayward judge father, he has his shit together, and she gets control of the massive ironclad manufacturing company and the American Steel Barrel Company, like these huge companies he owns.
Huh?
And she fucking slaves.
He was correct to leave that to her for sure.
She takes it over and she's like, okay, I'm gonna run this. I'm gonna do it so well. She goes on to patent several inventions which are related to oil manufacturing, and we still use many of those today. She did that. She also was like, we should treat our employees better.
Yeah.
So she provided them with healthcare benefits.
Oh, my God.
And recreational facilities.
Baby girl.
Yeah. And she's doing all these great things. And then she is not very good with the money part, though. So she fell victim to fraud. One of her employees, like, stole a bunch of fucking money from her or whatever.
Yeah.
And she ended up having to declare bankruptcy.
damn.
So she should have been set for life, right?
Yeah.
She's about 40.
Okay.
She's only 40.
Yeah.
And think of all this shit she's done. Let's recap.
Wow. Yeah.
She went around the world in 72 days. Mm-hmm. She pretended to be insane to expose the awful conditions of mental asylums. She patented two designs for steel cans. And she ran $1 million iron manufacturing business before she was 40.
Yeah.
Like, I need to get my life on track.
I know. Yeah, we're running out of time.
In her later years, she goes back to journalism. And she becomes a World War I journalist correspondent from Europe.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's over there. She's reporting. Mm-hmm, she's in it.
That's a calling. That is something that she absolutely should be doing.
She concludes her reporting on the war at the end of World War I. And she'd made a friend over there who was so impressed with her. He gives her this gift. Like, he gives her several gifts. But one of them was like this brooch and earrings that was owned by Queen Victoria.
Oh my God.
To an American.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy.
That is.
Yeah.
He just like had those also.
He just had them and he's like, you're worthy.
I'm going to give these to you. Yeah.
So while working as a writer still, she's about 57 and she dies from pneumonia.
Oh my God. Wow. I'm
in 1922.
I guess she would have had to die, huh? I'm sitting here like
nothing's taking Nellie down. She survived everything. Yeah. She was only 57. In a tribute after her death, the newspaper editor Arthur Brisbane remembered her as, quote, the best reporter in America.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is so earned.
A pneumonia. I don't know why that's like sending me like leprosy, a Christmas riddled leprosy,
right?
Like a leprosy riddled Christmas.
You go through all of that. You survive all those things and something mundane can take you out.
Okay.
Yeah. And people are sad about her death. But despite this, she's buried in an unmarked grave with like little ceremony.
What?
A funeral, like, with just a few family and friends happened, and she was buried. We know where she's buried, in Woodlawn Cemetery in the Bronx. But for some reason, she never got a proper headstone. I don't know why. Why?
What?
Why would this woman be buried in an unmarked grave?
Why would no one have done something about that
by
now?
They just didn't want to pay for it or what? That is unhinged.
Because if she would have said, like, I do not want to make some point or something, like, she would have wanted that point made.
Right.
You know, like.
Yeah. So
what?
This was such an injustice that in 1978.
Okay. Thank you.
The New York Press Club dedicated a headstone for her grave. And the headstone reads, Nellie Bly, Elizabeth Cochran Seaman, a famous news reporter. That's literally all it says. It doesn't say shit else. It doesn't say anything.
We could say so many things
a
right now.
A famous news reporter. You could, like, her obituary was beautifully written about all how talented she was. And
okay,
then
someone did that.
And then this acclaimed editor just had said, like, America's greatest reporter. And she doesn't even get a fucking tombstone.
What happened there?
I don't know. This is what she was fighting against her whole life. Women without husbands or brothers or fathers to take care of them just get fucking forgotten.
Yeah. See, I wonder if she did.
And she made a lot of strides towards changing that.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah, she fucking did.
She really did. What a life.
She did. Balls out, Nellie. Balls out, Nellie Bly.
Yeah.
Nellie balls out Bly.
Nellie balls out Bly. But look how pretty and cute.
Oh my gosh. Ooh, I think I've seen that. Oh my God.
I know. So good.
Oh, look at her. No, she doesn't look like she's taking your shit.
Nope.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Yeah, that's Nellie Bly.
How fucking cool, dude.
She lived a life, man.
Yeah. No, that's insane.
And it would be so easy to be like, well, these are the circumstances that I'm in. I guess I'm stuck here. What can I do? I'm just a girl.
Yeah.
And she was like, fuck that.
Oh, she said fuck that in like the biggest way.
So like a couple different times.
Yeah. A few different times to a few different people.
Uh-huh.
Oh my gosh.
She's like, I'm going to grow up and get me a pet monkey.
Yeah.
Name it McGinty.
Yeah.
Which is.
Is that even a real name? No, it's not. Fuck you. I'm Nellie Bly.
I'm Nellie Bly. I'm Nellie Pinkie Pie Bly.
That's. You know what? I completely forgot that it all started with Pinkie Pie.
Not even. I just added the pie. I just really like that. She's Pinkie Pie.
Oh my God. No, she's Pinkie Pie to me.
She's Pinkie Pie. Yeah.
Pinkie Pie. Yeah. Nellie Bly.
Pinkie Pie. Nellie Bly.
Oh my God. Stay tuned for a fresh cut.
Fresh cut.
Bye.
Bye.
Now it's time for a fresh cup. This one might be short. I don't know. I'm going out on a limb here.
Do it.
Okay. This is a Reddit. This is a Ask Reddit. And it says, what are your best trash talk one-liners?
Ooh, that's interesting.
We're going to give it a shot.
Okay.
Here. So the post says, it's from 13 years ago. I have hope.
I have hope.
And 13. What year is that,
Coco? Oh, God. 2011.
God, you're fast. That's insane how fast you are. I have hope in 2011.
Okay.
People in their shit talking.
Yeah.
Everyone seems to trash talk when playing sports or video games. I was wondering what some of your favorites are. I love the classic Duke ones. Your ass is grass and I've got a weed whacker. Or the more generic, you'd have better luck trying to score with your sister.
Oh.
These are very good. Those are very wholesome.
Very, very wholesome.
Let's see what other people got.
Some trash talk?
This is the first one. Here is the first, very next one.
Okay.
We're going in. I'm going to plant a tree in your mom's ass and then fuck your sister in its shade. Your mother's breasts sag with such severity that the late great surrealist artist Salvador Dali mistook them for clocks. Your mom is so fat, the probability of her being in an arbitrary point in a room is one. I don't get it.
Do you have a go-to trash talk line?
One time I told this person was like really mean. And I did tell him that the best parts of him ran down his mom's leg. Do you have one?
No, I really don't. I just say dumb things like, don't talk to my friend like that or I'll fuck you up or I'll run you over with my car.
This person, that's the Capricorn. Like, we're not dressing it up.
No.
We're not dancing around. I'm going to fucking end you. Hi.
Yep.
This person was kind of on my wavelength here.
Okay.
Your mom should have swallowed you.
Yeah, I like that one.
You look like I need a drink. Man, you're like school on a Sunday. No class.
No class.
Cute. That's like an itsy bitsy fresh cup. That was a fresh sip. What are your favorite trash talking
moments? Oh, you should tell us.
You should tell us. Put it like in quotes though, and so we know you're not saying it to us.
Please don't say it to us.
Because to be clear, cannot handle that.
No.
But do let us know. Oh my God, how fun.
Yeah.
Yay. Okay. Bye.
Bye. Okay.
I am like at full climax. No. I'm at full torque ready.
Nice.
To climax.
Oh, perfect.
That's how that works.
Come here.
Just so yeah, like I did not poop my pants.
It's right.
Like, I am concerned that
you may have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, boy. It's real trainy.
It's very trainy. Very trainy in adults. That much we know. Damn it. I forgot what I was going to say. A train.
At the Blackwell's Island Lunatic Asylum. Wow. Let's try that again.
Sunscreen and moisturize, baby.